getting the most out of yourself and others. Giving hints from his newest book, Top Performance, Zig on This Tape combines live presentations with personal messages for you as he shares tried and true applications of people management practices. Zig teaches with warmth, wit, and backs up the principles with solid guidelines for your application. So let's not wait any longer. Let's go straight to Zig Ziglar.
15% of the reason you get a job, keep that job, and move ahead in that job is determined by your technical skills and knowledge, regardless of your profession. That's what human engineer Cabot Roberts says. What about the other 85%? Cabot quotes Stanford Research Institute, Harvard University, and the Carnegie Foundation, which incidentally spent $1 million in 5 years in the research, as having proved that 85% of the reason you get a job, will keep that job, and move ahead in that job has to do with your people skills and people knowledge. I'm completely convinced he's right. As I travel around the country sharing ideas on personal growth, sales training, and the corporate concepts we teach at the Zig Ziglar Corporation, I become more and more aware of the critical need for specialized instruction on how we can manage ourselves and others for maximum effectiveness. As I visit with professionals from all walks of life, I see common problems in many, if not all, of the different situations men and women are facing. And the common denominator in these problems is always the same: people. So obviously, managing people, starting with yourself, becomes a high priority if we are to be successful. According to Megatrends author John Nesbitt, for the reinvented Information Age Corporation of 1985 and beyond, the challenge is retraining managers, not retraining workers. With this in mind, the ultimate goal of Top Performance is to develop excellence in managers and to provide management with teaching procedures and inspiration to effectively develop and utilize team members. The foundation for developing yourself and others is wrapped up in this principle. You can have everything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want. I've used this statement for nearly 30 years as a foundational truth, and never is the concept more accurate than when managing yourself and others. However, it is important for you to understand that I'm talking about a principle and not a tactic. As a tactic, the words would be crass and ineffective. As a principle, the concept works because it makes others want your leadership. A good friend of mine, Mary Crowley, says, "We are free up to the point of choice. Then the choice controls the chooser." Our success in life is determined by the choices we make. You are going to be making choices that will determine your success as you learn to manage yourself and others. To be effective in making proper choices, you must understand the difference between reacting and responding. It was January the 23rd, 1981. It was a Friday. It had been one of those weeks. I had been literally drove hard and hung up wet, as we'd say down home. I mean, I'd been about as busy as a man can get. That particular Friday morning, we had a four-hour recording session. Now, when you record, you got to move it up a notch because you don't have your body language and your eye contact to communicate. It's got to be all voice. So I was full speed ahead, wide open, 280 words a minute with gust up to 550. It was all there. Well, at the end of the 4 hours, I wasn't just whipped, I was whooped. And there is, as I say, quite a difference in the two. We had a flight going back to Dallas, leaving at 3 o'clock. The airlines had said to us, "Now, because you've got all of this gear, you need to get out here at least an hour early so we can secure it." So straight up and down at 1 o'clock when I finished, my son-in-law, Chad Whitmire, who works with me, packed up all of the gear as quickly as possible. We caught a cab, made a mad dash to the airport, got out there straight up and down 2 o'clock. As I walked in the front door, there were two humongous lines. And I picked out the one which I thought was the shortest and prepared to wait. But I noticed after I'd been there just a moment or so that a little lady was walking around behind the counter. And I looked on one end and there was a sign which said position closed. My experience told me that pretty soon position closed was gonna swing open over to position open. So I got ready. I wanted to be the first in that new line. And sure enough, about a minute later, down comes position closed, up goes position open, and the little lady looked out at the two long lines of people and smilingly said, "Those of you who have a seat on the 3 o'clock flight to Dallas, come over here. Well, quick like a bunny rabbit, I'll tell you, I was over there first in line. Little lady looked at me and grinned as she said, the 3 o'clock flight to Dallas has been canceled. I said, fantastic. She said, what'd you say? I said, fantastic. She said, now I got to ask you, I've just told you your flight's been canceled and you say it's fantastic. Now, why would you say a thing like that? And I said, ma'am, it's very simple. There are only 3 reasons on the face of this earth why anybody would ever cancel a flight to Dallas, Texas. I said, number one, something must be wrong with that airplane. Or number two, something must be wrong with a man gonna fly that airplane. Or number three, something must be wrong with the weather that man gonna fly that airplane in. Now, if either one of those 3 situations exist, I don't want to be up there. I want to be right down here. Fantastic. She said, yeah, but the next flight doesn't leave until 6:05. I said, fantastic. Well, by now, the other 2 long lines of people are looking over as if to say, who is that nut that says everything is fantastic? So I said, ma'am, you know, as she responded to me rather by saying, why would you say it's fantastic when I tell you that you're going to have a 4-hour wait here in the airport in Kansas City? I said, ma'am, it's very simple. I said, I am 54 years old, and never before, not even once in my entire lifetime, have I ever had a chance to spend 4 solid hours in this airport here in Kansas City, Missouri. And I said, do you realize at this precise moment, there literally are tens of millions of people on the face of this earth who not only are cold, but who also are hungry? And here I am in one of the most beautiful facilities in the whole world, bitterly cold outside, but nice and warm on the inside. And there's a nice coffee shop right down the way. Gonna go down there, get myself a cup of coffee. Gonna do some relaxing for just a few minutes. Then I've got some critically important writing, which I must get done. And who can think of a better place than a beautiful facility like this for me to do my creative work? I say it's fantastic. Now, those of you who might have picked up just on this particular segment of the Born to Win program might be thinking to yourself, well, I've heard about those positive thinkers, but that's ridiculous, Ziegler. Now, you know, you might also be wondering to yourself, I wonder if he really said that. Tell me the truth, Ziegler. Is that really what you said? Well, as we'd say down home, scouts, honor folks, that is exactly what I said. Okay, you said it now. Tell me this. Is that the way you felt? I mean, did you really feel that way? Tell me the truth, Ziegler. Did you feel that way? Well, of course not. At least initially, I did not feel that way. Many, many different times and many, many different ways, whether you respond or react is going to determine just how high you're going to go in the game of life. You see, to respond is positive. To react is negative. I chose to respond for one or two or three very simple reasons. You see, I don't have ulcers. I don't want ulcers. I don't need ulcers. I honestly don't think I will ever have ulcers because I respond instead of react. You see, you go to the doctor and you're sick and he gives you a prescription and says, see me tomorrow. And if you go back the next day and he begins to shake his head and say, uh-oh, your body is reacting to the medicine, then everybody gets upset. But if he looks at you and says, oh boy, your body is responding to this medicine, then you're really going to get excited because you know it's doing you some good. You see, folks, you do good when you respond, but you're not doing so good when you react. You see, I responded for that reason. Now, I had a couple of reactions I actually could have had. You know, I could have gotten pretty sarcastic when she told me that the next flight didn't leave until 6:05 or that my flight had been canceled. I could have said, that's great. That's just great. I break my silly neck running through all this traffic trying to get out here, you know, to catch a plane as you had told me to do, expecting it to leave. And I get here and you tell me that you've canceled a flight. Well, let me tell you something. When I drove up, I noticed that you've got a dozen airplanes sitting out there not doing a cotton picking thing. Now, why can't you let me get on one of those and go down to Dallas? Why can't you do that? Just answer that question. I could have done that. And the next flight still leaves at 6:05. 5. Now, folks, let me tell you something. There are some things you just are not going to change. If you're black, you're going to stay black. If you're white, you're going to stay white. You're not going to add one cubit. I don't care how much you think about it to your height. You're not going to change who your parents were or where you were born. You're not going to change a thing which has happened in the past. That is over and done with. But the question is, do you respond to situations and make them positive, or do you react, which is negative? See, I could have had another reaction. I could have ranted and raved and whooped and shouted and snorted and screamed and hollered. I could have gotten obnoxious and made a complete idiot out of myself right then and there. I could have said, that's crazy. Who's a dum-dum that made such an idiotic decision anyhow? I want to go to Dallas. I've been gone all week long. My family misses me, and I miss my family. Let me see the man who made this dumb decision. I want to see him right now. I could have done that. And the next flight still leaves at 6:05. I know that many of you are very familiar with what happened when our president was shot in 1981. You know what happened at the sound of the gunshot, and I'm absolutely convinced he is alive today because the men who had been assigned to guard his life responded in a very positive way. At the sound of the gunshot, they instantly moved him into the back seat of the limousine and they sped off to the hospital. And it's only been in the last few months that we have learned that we came within a whisper of losing our president. The way our president himself responded to me said a whole lot about the man himself. You remember the scene? He was there in excruciating pain. He was absolutely almost in shock. His wife was there, scared to death. The television cameras were on him, and he looked at her and smilingly said, "Honey, I just forgot to duck." And 200 million Americans said, "Atta boy, Ron. There's my president." I learned more about him in 2 minutes than I'd learned about him in many, many years by watching him respond. You see, I could watch you for 6 months or a year or 2 years, follow you around and watch everything you do, and I could learn a whole lot about you. But the truth of the matter is, I can watch you under adverse circumstances for 2 minutes. And I can learn as much about you when the pressure is on, when things are not going well, when things are tough. I can learn more about you in 2 minutes than I can normally by watching you for days and weeks and months. Do you respond or do you react? Suppose at the sound of the gunshot, those men assigned to protect the president's life, suppose one of them had said, did you hear that? Well, wonder what that was, you know. And suppose he said, oh, no, here I am, 70 years old. I've worked all of my life for this job. And now 68 days after I get it, somebody shoots me. It's not fair. You see, the way you respond is important. Do you respond or do you react? You see, the truth of the matter is, I did not know a single soul at that big old airline. I mean, not a one. Didn't know the president or the chairman of the board or the ticket agent or a single stewardess. And as far as I was concerned, though it was their airline, they could literally cancel my flight. But there's no way they're going to cancel my day. You see, the day is mine. As a matter of fact, God himself gave it to me. He even told me to rejoice in this specific day. No, I'm going to let them cancel my flight because it's their airline. I'm not going to let them cancel my day because it belongs to me to use productively. You see, I don't know if you've ever been guilty of this, but I know some people, you know, maybe they're riding down the freeway on the way to their job in the morning, you know, neither thinking negative or positive. I mean, they're just kind of in neutral. And all of a sudden, some idiot pulls right in front of them and they hit the brakes and the horn all at the same time and they shake their fist, you know, I mean, they really get after them. Why don't you watch where you're going, you dumb bunny? I could have been killed. Not only do they proceed to give them a piece of their mind there, but when they get down on the office, they rant and they rave and they whoop and they shout and they snort and they scream and they holler and they just carry on. Why don't they make people around here get licenses? They don't know how to drive here. I mean, this is wild. This is crazy. Hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, they still talking about the dodo that pulled in front of them. And in the meantime, the man who committed the dastardly deed rides merrily along, completely unaware of the fact that you even exist. But he is in complete control of your life, telling you how to think and how to act and how to feel, affecting your attitude with your fellow employees and affecting your productivity tremendously. And you see, folks, that's just not a good idea. That's one of the reasons we're going to get into a formula here in a few minutes about what you can do to build an attitude formula or foundation so solidly that when somebody does rain on your parade, when things don't go exactly like you want them to go, your attitude is still going to be good. Now, we've got lots to overcome because, you know, this started long time ago. It really started in the Garden of Eden. You remember the scene? God had given Adam and Eve, I mean absolutely everything, paradise. He said, now you can have it all, except there's one tree that has some fruit on it. You can't eat it. Well, you know the story. They ate the fruit. Then the Lord came walking in the garden that evening, and as I said earlier, this conversation is not going to be verbatim. But the Lord came walking in the garden, you know, and he said, Adam, where are you? Over here, Lord. Adam, did you eat that fruit? Simple question. He doesn't want a theological answer, just wants yes or no. But you know what Adam said? He said, Lord, let me tell you about that woman. The Lord said, Eve, did you eat that fruit? Simple question. Yes or no is all he wants. But Eve said, Lord, let me tell you about that serpent. And, of course, the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. Now, you know, what I'm going to say to you is that you don't have a leg to stand on either. When you blame other things and other people for your difficulty, I want to simply say to you that you can learn to respond instead of reacting.
To be a top performer, you must make the proper choices. Now, if you've never had instructions on how to respond positively on what top performers do to become top performers, then you have a built-in excuse. But wait a minute. I'm not going to let you hang your hat on that excuse. Together, we're going to look at how, what, who, why, when, and where to make the proper choices so that you can get the most out of yourself and others. Now, here is a formula for success. I think you will agree that the responsibility of your organization, whether it is you and one other person, or
when we got through, we discovered there were 22 things she liked about her job. Now, I said, what I want you to do is I want you to go home tonight. I want you to take this list and get in front of the mirror just before you go to bed. And I want you to slowly read every single thing you like about your job. The last thing at night, as you plow it into your subconscious mind, I want you to think of all of the good things which are there. And tomorrow morning, just before you go to work, I want you to get the list out again, get back in front of that mirror, and slowly read all of the good things which you like about your job. And take the list with you. And take it with you every day, because you're going to now become a good finder. You're going to discover that as you analyze what you do, the company you work for, and the people you work with, that there are a lot of beautiful and positive qualities there. And the more you look for those, the more you're going to find. Do this for at least 21 days, because it takes 21 days to establish a new habit. I was back over there in Birmingham about a month later. And as I walked in, here sits the little lady right on the front door, on the front row, grinning just like she'd walked through a swinging door on somebody else's push. I mean, she was really tickled, you know. And I asked, I said, well, how you doing? She said, well, I'm still not completely out of the woods. But she said, you can't believe how much those people down there have changed.
Her world changed because her attitude changed. Yours will do the same. Expect the best from yourself and others. The L in our jail formula stands for loyalty.
When I talk about loyalty, I'm talking about to the company you represent. When you work for them, you simply give it everything you got, and for a very practical reason. You see, the law clearly says that if you give it your very best, it's got to give you back its very best. But I also talk about loyalty, husbands to wife. In my lifetime, I've had some of the rarest privileges anyone could conceivably imagine. I've been on the platform with our current president as well as our former president. I know personally three men who are worth well over $500 million. I've been on the platform with the superstars in television and athletics and the movie industry. I have worked with people who make literally millions of dollars a year. But for 14 years of my life, I sold person to person in the home. I have been in homes where I literally could look through the floor and see the ground underneath. I have been in homes where I could look through the ceiling and see the stars up above. I've crossed every racial, socio-economic, ethnic, religious line our society offers. And I will flat look you dead center and say to you that I've never known a happy man or a happy woman who was married, who was not 100% loyal to their mate, period. Folks, what I'm really saying is that if you want all of the good things in life, we got to have the solid foundation. Now, why not talk so much about this? And while a lot of people would interpret as being a business course, a motivation course, very simple. There isn't an owner in this live audience today. There isn't a manager in this live audience today who won't tell you very quickly that his or her employees, whether they be male or female, are better, more productive employees if they have a happy home life. As a matter of fact, a West Germany insurance company has just completed a study in which they discovered that if the husband, when he leaves home, if he kisses his wife goodbye, I mean kisses her goodbye like his wife, not like his little sister, that his life expectancy is 5 years longer than the man who does not. So you see, fellas, your very life is at stake. Love your wife is what I'm really saying. But, you know, there's another side of that coin, too. They also discovered, girls, that your standard of living is at stake for you to love your husband, because the husband who gets the goodbye kiss every day as a wife, not as a sister now, gets that kind of a goodbye kiss, his income is over 30% more than those who do not. Now, girls, there's a new wardrobe, a new car, and there's a whole lot of other things. You see, I'm talking about a very practical foundation upon which we are going to build.
Let's close with some wise words from Elbert Hubbard. If you work for a man, in heaven's name, work for him. If he pays you wages which supply you bread and butter, work for him. Speak well of him, stand by him, and stand by the institution he represents. If put to a pinch, an ounce of loyalty is worth a pound of cleverness. If you must vilify, condemn, and eternally disparage, resign your position. And when you're outside, damn to your heart's content. But as long as you're a part of the institution, do not condemn it. If you do that, you're loosening the tendrils that are holding you to the institution. And at the first high wind that comes along, you will be uprooted and blown away, and probably will never know the reason why. Many years ago, Mark Twain said, "One learns peoples through the heart, not the eyes or the intellect." Unfortunately, as managers of people, we often feel like the speaker who was met with less than a resounding welcome and said, in the words of William Shakespeare, "It's nice to be among friends, even if they are somebody else's." So many times, managers and their employees almost seem to work at developing an adversary relationship. Instead, we have to be like the small boy who was confronted by the three big bullies, any one of whom could have obliterated him. They even gave some indication they were going to do exactly that. Like a lot of us, the little guy wasn't too well qualified to fight, but like all successful managers, he was qualified to think. In this case, his physical well-being depended on it. With this in mind, the little guy backed up dramatically, drew a line in the dirt with the toe of his shoe, looked the leader of the group in the eye, and said, "Now you just step across that line. Well, as you might imagine, the big bully confidently, even arrogantly, stepped across the line. The small boy then smiled broadly and exclaimed, "Now we're both on the same side. If we're going to be successful in managing people, we've got to remember that the manager and the people he manages are on the same side." You probably recall that Sir Edmund Hillary and his native guide, Tanzing, were the first people to make the historic climb of Mount Everest in 1953. Coming down from the mountain peak, Sir Edmund suddenly lost his footing. Tanzing held the line taut and kept them both from falling by digging his axe into the ice. Later, Tanzing refused any special credit for saving Sir Edmund Hillary's life. He considered it a routine part of the job. As he put it, mountain climbers always help each other. Can we, as managers, afford to be any different? Aren't we obligated to work with our people to direct their energies and help them to develop their skills and talents to the fullest? It is my conviction that if you could take only one thought or one idea out of top performance, it would be the thought I will share with you now. If you would really be an expert in the people business that determines 85% of your success, then you should look into this statement. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care about them.
I love to play golf. I don't know how many of you folks in the audience today love to play golf. Just a matter of curiosity, how many of you like to play golf? Okay? It's my favorite game. I just love to get. I don't get to play very often. So when I do, I like to get out there and I tee that ball up so I can get at it. And like a lot of these, sometimes golfers, man, I get after that dude. I rear back and I let the string all the way out. Boom! And then if I can find it, I hit that dude again. Well, anyhow, I found out a long time ago that a fast game of golf and a slow game of golf both require about 5 hours. And when you're gone as much as I'm gone, I'm not about to go home and kiss that redhead and that boy goodbye and hit for the golf course, but I love to play golf. So several years ago, I came up with an absolutely brilliant idea, if I do say so myself. Bought my wife and my son a set of golf clubs. And everybody was excited about it, except my wife and my son. But they went along with the idea, for about 5 games. And in the 5th game, a redhead said, "Honey," said, "I just don't like to play golf. That is just too hot, or it's too cold, or it's too wet, or it's too dry, or it's too windy, or too something." He said, just count me out. Well, there went golf buddy number one. Into the summer, my boy said, "Dad," said, "I don't hardly know how to tell you this." He said, "I know how good you like to play golf, and I know how good you like to be with me and all. And Dad, I like to be with you too, But, Dad, golf is just not my game," said, "count me out." And went golf buddy number two. Well, for the next 3 years, there wasn't much golf in my life. And then one night, we'd been out to dinner, and we were over on North Central Expressway. That's when the Dalrymple driving range was still over there. We'd been to dinner, and as we were riding past, all of a sudden, my son spoke up and said, "Dad," said, "let's stop and hit a few." Well, my boy is a smooth talker. So we stopped to hit a few. We were banging away, and after a couple of minutes, he said, "Dad, let me borrow one of your woods." So I handed my son my 4-wood, and he choked up on a little bit, and he reared back, and I mean, he let the string out. He tore into that dude. He busted it right down the middle, about 40 yards further than he'd ever hit a golf ball before in his life. And when he turned around, that smile on his face clearly said, "Ziegler, you got yourself a golfing buddy now." Second most beautiful smile I've ever seen on that boy's face. Now, the most beautiful one came a couple of days later. We were out at the club playing. On one of the par fours, my boy again took that 4-wood, and he really poleaxed that dude this time. Had a little draw on the end of it, hit the ground, running like a scared rabbit, ended up dead center right in the middle of the fairway. Perfect position. We got down to it. My boy took his 5-iron out, and just like you see him doing on television, kept his head down. He smooth stroked that ball. It took off. It got right over the green. It landed just as soft as a feather, about 40 feet from the pin. Now he's hunting his bird. Now, if you're not a golfer, that simply means that if he sinks this putt, he's one under par for the hole. Well, I showed the boy how to line the putt. I showed him how to stroke it. And when he stroked that ball, if you're a golfer, you'll appreciate this. You knew when he stroked it, that was it. There never was any doubt about it. It was in the cup all the way. When that ball hit the bottom of that cup, that boy jumped straight up about 6 feet.
and still beat me to the ground by 5 seconds, I'll tell you. You're talking about excitement? Man, there was excitement. I grabbed that boy and hugged him. We did a victory dance there for a couple of minutes, and all of a sudden it dawned on me that I had a problem. You see, I was on the green in two also. I was hunting my bird. I was only about 10 feet away. Now, I knew that if I missed the putt, the boy would figure that I had done it on purpose so he could win. That would have given him a cheap victory, which is quite a loss. Therefore, I determined that I was going to do my very best so that if I did miss it, then I could honestly look at my son and say, congratulations, son, you've won it fair and square. Well, my best effort always includes a little providential help, which I personally believe is perfectly legitimate, even on a golf course, maybe especially on a golf course. Well, anyhow, I lined the putt as well as I know how to line a putt, and I stroked it as well as I've ever stroked a putt in my life, and just like it had eyes, it went straight to the bottom. Before I reached down to pick the putt out of the cup, I looked at my son, and I said, now tell me the truth, boy. Were you pulling for Dad? And my son looked at me, and without any hesitation, without any question at all in his mind, with considerable firmness and complete directness, said, Dad, I always pull for you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's love. When you understand that my son was only 11 years old, that he had never beaten his dad a hole of golf, that it would have meant a great deal to him, and yet without hesitation, Dad, I always pull for you. I believe personally that's what we need in every home, in every county, in every state in this great land of ours. It's what we need between the parent and the child, between the teacher and the student, between the husbands and the wives, between the judge and those who are in front of him, between every individual in the game of life. When you're dealing with another person, we've got to look at that other individual and say, what is in the long-range best interest of that individual? See, a lot of times people want to hear certain things, and what they want to hear is not always what they need to hear. Real love says we deal with that other person on the basis of what is best for that other person. When you're trying to persuade another individual to take a specific action, if you're pulling for them to take the right action for their benefit, not yours, theirs, at that precise instant, you become infinitely more persuasive, infinitely more professional, infinitely more productive. You become infinitely more, because people don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care. Now, sacrifice and giving part of ourselves is not a popular concept in our society today. But think with me for just a second. When you come in at the end of the day and your spouse greets you at the door, chattering like a magpie about something in which you are totally disinterested, and you stop and give him or her your undivided attention, aren't you giving your loved one a part of your life? Aren't you giving up a little bit of yourself? When you have been dealing with people, not always successfully, all day, what you really want is a few minutes of peace and quiet in front of the evening news or with a newspaper, just as you settle down your children whom you love, but want to do so from a distance for the next few minutes, come climbing on you as if you were a jungle gym. At this point, when you either turn the TV off or put the newspaper down so that you can give them your love and undivided attention, you're investing a part of your life in theirs and giving up a little bit of yourself. When you're dead tired because it's been one of those days and an employee needs an empathetic ear and counseling and you take the time to listen, aren't you giving up a part of yourself? If you would be an expert in the people business, remember, people just don't care how much you know until they know how much you care about them. Management's imperative is to cultivate its human resources. And since you're involved in top performance, obviously you realize the importance of your greatest resource, your people. Here's some suggestions from researchers which we are reinforcing and expanding throughout top performance. Show respect for a job well done. Get rid of second-class job citizenship regardless of pay differences. Real job equality.